How everybody? I'm Chris.
I am Craig.
I am known as Jack.
Excellent. Good. Good introduction, that.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah.
It's better than your clap.
I've decided to embrace it now.
I was thinking of bringing a wee guitar and a loop pedal.
Yeah, you should think about that.
Like a nice musical accompaniment.
Bringing it where?
A slightly perfunctory guitar and a loop pedal to this. I could do a slightly perfunctory self-accompaniment.
Functional music.
Yeah, to my commentary.
What, we'll get into this. You should do that sort of thing where you just play along as you're talking.
Yeah.
Do you remember, who was that woman that sang that song, New York, Black Lassie? New York, Concrete Jungle. Is that not the Muppet version I'm singing?
I don't know.
What was her name? She was quite big a few years ago.
Grace Jones.
No, not that big.
Grace Kennedy. Brian Kennedy.
But the point is, she did that. No, she did that big song. It was New York. It was a big song.
I've never heard it.
You have heard it.
But you know more about the young music. You've got more than
young
talent.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I can't remember.
How many years ago are we talking?
5.
Oh, no, I don't know that young part.
The point is, she used to do interviews with a piano or a keyboard, actually.
Did she?
I like to think it was a nice clavinova. And she would just go, as she was like tinkle away. She was doing interviews. I'm like, we stopped doing that.
You know, Cleo Lane, love.
Not even Ronnie Barker doing Cleo Lane. Blind Marsh.
Guess what, Cleo Lane?
Blind Marsh. Boo! She had it run. She had it run.
They go,
they all run after the farmer's wife.
Can you guess what Cleo Lane gave my dad?
The clap.
Johnny Dyke one. What?
The fucking
pebble. The fucking
pebble. Yeah,
she did,
yeah.
So it was close.
Big Pebble won people, weren't they, Johnny Dankworth and Cleo Lane?
Yeah, at night as well.
Right, this isn't getting the sausage.
Yeah,
no,
well, let's
we'll have to
yeah.
see
right,
the Avro yeah. Embassy signal.
Avro Embassy.
Of what, though? Yeah.
Avro Vulcan.
What are we doing a commentary of?
We're doing a commentary of...
The fog.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a wee bit early in the night,
just
actually. We should be doing it a wee bit earlier. But anyway...
To keep us warm.
I think the subtitles are on, so... That's the logo spinning around.
Is it
Apple nice
Embassy?
Logo?
It is that, wasn't it? Yeah, I like
Embassy.
That.
So this is our Halloween special.
Quite a lot of horror films from the early 80s were Avro Embassy films.
Were they?
Avco.
Is it Avco, sorry?
Yeah.
I'm getting mixed up with my Avro Vulcan.
Anyway.
Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream?
Edgar Allan. Hear the raven, pass the raven.
Have you ever noticed?
Never more.
That, straight away, you're looking at beautiful John Carpenter framing.
No, that's quite interesting. Is the fact that this is this sequence was done as a what do you call it? A pickup.
Was
yes.
it?
Yes.
In the studio. Yeah. So we'll talk about that as we go.
It has a crazy crash zoom at one point. A very strange edit.
So hang on,
keep
what?
No, we'll watch then, because you'll miss it. It's
but
very...
did they pick it up for expositional reasons or what? Or because there was
just for plotting reasons, like pacing reasons.
Yeah,
so
okay.
The have you ever seen the outtakes of Jack Houseman doing this?
No,
it's really
I think
funny.
It's actually on the video that I brought. It's on the DVD that I brought.
Oh,
I haven't watched it
because he just sort of goes 5 minutes. To, oh shit! Sorry,
yeah,
John.
Watch this amazing cut here.
Okay. Whoa!
Oh yeah,
that's kind of weird.
It's almost like a sort
that
of
is weird.
Racking.
Yeah,
a very quick rack focus. It's
yeah,
very
that
strange.
Is weird.
And what the magic of movies? This is recorded. This was done on a soundstage.
Was it?
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It really looks like it's on a beach.
Yeah, it really. I remember seeing this the first time and totally being into the film in the first 30 seconds because of this great voice telling your story.
Give us to Jen Craig, who directed it, who made it, who
yeah,
wrote it.
Why
are
we doing this film?
Why are we doing it?
What's going on?
What
the hell is going on?
The master, John Carpenter.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about him before. We did Prince of Darkness. Was it a year ago?
Yeah, we did it
2 years ago. Because 2 years ago was Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, with Marky Mark.
Yeah.
Yes, with our John Landis.
Yeah, we
third
did.
Max
we talked about how much we love John Carpenter. He turns up quite soon. For me, in a field of great, he's got a field full of great movies.
Mm-hmm.
This one is the finest. This is the one. Well, it's the one I like the most. I suppose probably if I had to say which is the single best film of that run, I'd probably say The Thing. But this is the one I like the most.
We haven't done The Thing, have we?
No, we should. But I love
Next
I love a be. Ghost story. And this is a proper ghost story.
Yeah, just they very deliberately did the ghost story, didn't they? After doing Halloween. So this fits in having made Darkest Dark.
Yeah.
And
Assault on Precinct 13.
Assault on Precinct 13, which... was as I was watching. I've been watching quite a lot of Carpenter interviews recently. And I don't mean recent interviews, but you know, ones he's done over the years, where he talks about the success or otherwise of the various different films, and how the Warrior, A Song Precinct 13.
He looks like an old lizard here at the end, doesn't he? When he just sits there, and then it pans up.
Yeah, he does look quite lizard-like.
It tilts.
Is it tilts? Yeah.
It tilts up the way, and you get this beautiful
sort of classic Carpenter.
The coastline as well, and the title, it's just glorious. Look at that.
It's a bit like it's a bit like Highlander.
Yeah,
it's a wee bit, I suppose.
Look at that.
Inverness, California.
That's a place you want to go to, isn't it?
We'll come back to that.
John Carpenter. It's funny how early this kid
very nice
his title,
well,
his name and the title.
I'll come to that.
Have you got a story on that? Yeah. Good. Let's bank that.
So he made Assault Precinct 13. And there was his ex-bird at the time, Deborah Hill.
Deborah Productions.
Starring his current bird at the time. His current wife.
Adrian Barbeau.
Adrian Barbeau.
Bong.
Bong, bong.
And he turns up here. There he is.
Yeah, there he is.
He's the Johnny.
Is he?
Well, but pretty much anybody in a John Carpenter film where you see smoking is John Carpenter.
Yeah.
He is mad for the tabs, isn't
he? He is mad for the tabs.
Yeah.
To the extent that... and I'm quite mad for the tabs, although I'm trying not to be. But,
I see that. Good
but he does that thing in interviews where he does now where he takes long sort of gargly swallows when he talks. So like he'll talk like this and then carry on talking.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Anyway...
I church that, by the way.
Assault and Precinct 13 was not a hit
in
America.
Right.
And it got shown not a reasonable time delay. The great Hal Holbrook.
Yes.
Still
with us, isn't he, Hal?
Still hanging on
empty. You know, especially on this Halloween night.
He's like 104.
Yeah.
It's
his fault.
I think he's doing okay.
When he dies, it's your fault.
I'm more worried about John pegging him.
But in any case, Assault and Precinct 13 wasn't a hit. There was a sort of a furlough, and then it was shown that the BFI showed it in London, and it got a big critical response.
When did the BFI, as in at the time?
At the time,
released?
Yeah. So
really?
It came
Why
out.
Why did they decide to do
it
that?
It came out, well, just because
was it
they showed, you know, one of these, it was like a film festival, they did a screening.
Was it much beloved of Les Correspondants du Carrière du Cinéma?
Yeah, all the film jotters mobs.
Excellent,
were in
there. Yeah.
Anyway, it was a big, it got a lot of noise, and it was because of that that it then picked up some traction, and he got to make Halloween. And the interesting thing is, he describes this in the interview and then says, but that's pretty much been the way it's been for almost every film I've ever made.
Wow.
It's initially not a hit in America.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of attention in Europe. And then the Americans go,
okay. He's a man to be thoroughly, thoroughly cherished. He has given us so many great movies.
We're not very far into it now. We've already had a little exposition at the top.
That tells us about what happens on April the 21st of August.
And this is Hal now found in the Blake's diary.
Yeah.
Wow.
It has a beautiful atmosphere. This would, of course, I suppose, be Dean Cundey.
Yeah, Dean Cundey shot it. Looks phenomenal, doesn't it?
Dean Cundey, when he started doing... when he started doing cinematography for John Carpenter, he wasn't really a cinematographer, was he? He'd been doing a lot of... like he tried to direct some low-budget...
I must admit, I don't know that much about him.
Yeah, because, again, in another one of these interviews, I'm sure John Carpenter said that he kind of talked him into being the cinematographer.
Yeah, right.
Because he was trying to be a director and he was doing bits and pieces.
What's his name also? The guy who... he did that a lot because, like, the guy who directed Halloween 3 Season of the Witch was like his editor and stuff.
Mm.
And the guy who co-wrote Halloween, who also plays Michael Myers, was actually the production designer or something.
And Nick Castle.
Nick Castle, that's who I'm thinking of, yeah.
Was drafted in to save this.
As editor?
No.
No?
So, see all of this?
Yeah.
All of this is added later.
Because this is some of the best stuff.
So,
right,
why?
So,
yeah, so why did they have to go back and do stuff? Is it pacing?
So they made the film. Carpenter says that he made the and Deborah Hill. So they're not just it's not just Bologna. And Deborah Hill being the producer. So they shot it, made it, finished it, and it was about 2 weeks before it had to be delivered. and he showed it to his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the unanimous opinion of all his friends was, this doesn't work. It's not scary. You don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. It looks nice. So they realised they had a severe problem. All of this stuff with the effect on the town of the cars and then the houses, mm-hmm. the poltergeist stuff, was done later.
Wow.
The bit at the end you'll see with the pirates climbing up on the top of the lighthouse.
Yeah, I knew about that, yeah.
Basically any of the stuff...
Which is scary.
That's scary, yeah. Flat out scary stuff, yeah. Was shot, edited, mastered in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then spliced into the final cut and delivered.
There was Tommy Lee Wallace's name came out. That's what I was thinking.
Tommy Lee Wallace,
that's
right.
That's fascinating, because I've always thought this is some of the most effective stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not the most effective stuff in the film. The whole film for me is joyful, but this stuff sets it up so well.
But
I love that dirty bastard drinking the bit of orange juice.
Yeah, he's putting it back again.
Anybody want some orange juice, please?
Bata bata dum dos.
We can talk about Inside Number 9 in a bit.
Yeah, we can, yeah.
Now, was that the case with the other John Carpenter films, or just this
yeah,
one?
Yeah, he did it as well with Escape from New York.
Mm.
So in Escape from New York, I mean, one of the strengths, obviously, is that he listens to people's opinions.
Yeah.
And do you know Escape from New York terribly well?
A little bit.
So you know how it starts with the little exposition that's 1994 or whatever it is, whatever year it is, and
nice watch thing.
And then there's the first shot of the helicopter going round the Statue of Liberty or whatever. Well, that was originally about 12-15 minutes into the film,
right. Right,
because there was a whole section at the start which was Snake Plissken's arrest.
I've heard that.
And when he showed it to his compadres,
yeah.
They all said, by the time they finished it, it's like, what's this about?
Uh-huh.
Because is it about Plissken? Is it about the president? It takes ages to get to New York. So he just chopped the entire first...
And so much the better
He
for
just
it,
dropped the first reel.
Wow.
The genius of it is that Plissken just walks into it as a fully formed character.
Character, and you don't need to know who he is.
Of course, the matte painting for all the beginning of Escape from New York was by...
Oh, was it Cameron?
It's James Cameron, yeah. That's right, yeah. He was the matte artist on it all.
And actually, that shot of the Statue of Liberty is the only shot done in New York.
Oh, really?
The rest of it was filmed in...
LA?
St. Louis.
Oh, really? Right.
Okay. Well, you know those streets? You know, when they're in the streets and the buildings are all burned, whatever. There had just been a major fire at the docks in St. Louis. So all those buildings, that's not dressing. They're all burnt down and broken down.
Oh, fantastic.
And the city was like, yeah, absolutely. You can have a broken down plane.
It's like that tenement along from the tramway at Pollock Shields. Yeah. It's been empty like that. It's weird that, isn't it? Yeah.
Maybe it's John Carpenter. Was it John Carpenter's
credit's
gone
for a long time?
That's what I was going to say. The credit's gone for about the first 8 minutes of the film. Can I just point out, in terms of set dressing and whatnot at the moment, that Chris... We are looking at your magnificent, sir. Your magnificent golden candles.
Nice, aren't they?
With slightly Nazi-ish
cherubs. A slight Wehrmacht cherubs.
Yeah. I think we should maybe get a photo of one of them and stick it out when we do this, because it's lovely.
They're nice, aren't they?
I love them.
Nice. Mm. Very opposite.
Nice gothic candles.
So here we go. Here's the first great moustache wearer of the film. Actually, the third, really. But for once, Tom Atkins doesn't have a moustache. Despite the fact he was a man who carried a moustache off brilliantly, including in Halloween 3.
He kind of looks like he's not right
without a moustache. And of course, Jamie Lee Curtis, who was still only about, 20 when she made this?
Yeah. And Jamie Lee Curtis was not really meant to be the star of this. The star was meant to be Arjun Barbeau.
Uh-huh.
But when they came to market it, this is before they did the stuff I was telling you about, she's just meant to be one of an ensemble cast. But Halloween was such a hit, and...
Scream Queen.
They just decided, well, the studio, Avco Embassy, were like, well, the poster, the original poster for The Fog is very arty, just The Fog and, you know, whatever. And then it's like, no, we'll get a picture of Jamie Lee Curtis screaming and fog and pirates and shit like that. All of the
Why
stuff
you want that.
All of the stuff where you see the pirates all standing about, that's all in the pickups.
Right.
Because the Carpenter says that they were going for the whole, you know, like Halloween, it's just the shape and you don't see it, it's in your imagination. And it transpired that when you watched it, there wasn't actually anything in your imagination.
It's funny because, you know, this is the thing that you get quite a lot, with, particularly with horror fans, is the type that would say, it's far too scary. It's far too classy to be scary.
They would always say,
no, less is more, less is better. And actually, the great example of that is Night of the Demon, where there's this myth grew up that there was no demon in it and it was cut in, which is complete nonsense. There was more of it put in after Tourneur had handed in the cup, but nevertheless, it was always still there. And it works fucking beautifully.
Oh, the way it's shot.
And same in this, it works beautifully.
Sort of the backlit.
Coming down the tracks. It's fantastic,
with the train backlit coming down the other side. Oh, it's so phenomenal.
Now, I watched that during the week with our very good friend Gordon, and I watched it on the Colossus, the television, using...
The largest television in the free world.
Yeah, using the new 2K BFI restored release from a company whose name escapes me at the moment. Very good release of Night of the Demon, which has come out in Blu-ray, and it looked fucking beautiful. Speaking of which, Adrian Barbeau. Very sexy lady.
So, the script's by Carpenter, yeah? Is that right?
Yes, and Deborah Hill, I think, together.
And it's not from anything? It's not like from a...
No, they tell a story that after they'd seen Made Halloween, they'd been over in England for a holiday.
Yeah.
And for screenings and things.
Uh-huh.
And they went, being sort of that type, they went to Stonehenge to have a look at Stonehenge. It was quite early in the morning.
Yeah.
And the way they say it is there was a fog bank lying off in the distance. And Deborah Hill said to John Carpenter, what do you think's in that fog bank? Because there was sort of lights in it. Because it was the dawn was coming up. And Carpenter said, I think it's ghosts. Ooh. And so they decided, well, I think our next film should be a ghost story set in the fog. Mm. What do you know about the fog, Jack?
Not a great deal. Well, that's because I don't know very much about it. I think somewhere in my head...
Cheers!
I'd always associated...
Why is he here again?
Because... Why am I here?
Chris, are you playing with your bollocks?
Yeah, I'm sitting them up. Just get them in a line.
Good lad. Yeah.
I think in my head I'd always somehow associate it with Stephen King, as a Stephen King-esque type of story.
There's a James Herbert novel, The Fog.
There is the James Herbert novel, The Fog.
Which includes a man wanking over schoolboys.
Oh, did you notice that there?
What was that?
On the radio, it's a song by the Coupe de Villes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is John Carpenter's band.
What's it?
Yeah.
Actual
band.
I bet that's stank in that.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Inside that trolley.
There's a lot of stale beer and bums.
Oh, aye. He's right beside that big lad's bum as well.
He is.
That's not a place.
Well, the sailors.
He's getting
a ragged
whiff of that.
Oh, all of the fog.
All of this is
pickup as well.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. I wasn't aware of the beginning stuff. I knew that they'd put in more of that as the. Later on in the production.
So does any of it feel crowbar-y or not?
I don't think any of it does.
No, I think it's perfect.
Well, I think the proof of it is that until I actually saw that stuff describing it, it never occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
Impressive.
When was the... can you think of the first time you saw this?
I think it's one of those films that, like, my big brother Roger would have taped and watched.
Your big brother Roger. Come and watch The Fog.
Was he the actual lighthouse standing above the fog?
It was just him lighting a fag.
Yeah, that
was like, oh!
So I think it must have been, it was probably a late night ITV showing, I'm going to guess. So I don't know if I don't think
I was associated with a sort of BBC Two.
BBC really? Two, yeah. Christmas of about 18 years was on.
Yeah, that must have been the first time I saw it.
Okay. But it's one of those things that I can honestly say, I can't really remember a time when I hadn't watched it or known it. I think I saw it on video very early doors, and as you know, video for me
was very early doors.
I have that in my calendar, by the way, the anniversary of you buying your video recorder. So.
Go on in, which day is it again?
Wednesday, December the 23rd, 1983.
Well done. Yeah, 81.
81, I beg your pardon.
How dare you say, sorry.
83, Fox.
83.
And that's the big lad that's also in The Thing, isn't it? The one on the left.
Is it?
You see him from the front.
So I don't know if I've ever seen this from beginning to end.
Look at that. That's beautiful, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah,
I presume that was in the original.
Yes, that was.
Because that's too big to put in. And then it all kicks off.
Yeah.
Nice beards.
But I think really it just must have been... That's it. You know, they hear some stuff and it disappears and then they're just found drifting or something. But yeah, no, I'm the same. I can't really think of a time that I've not seen The Fog, but I remember being terrified by it.
Yeah.
By just perchance, I think kind of last Christmas, either on Christmas Eve or Christmas night, I found myself, after everybody had finally fucked off to their beds, sitting watching it and thinking, this is a perfect Christmas film.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. I also like the fact that it's a great merger of ghost story and 80s slasher film.
Yeah, all
it's
the
terrifically gory.
I've misspoke. What the reshoot was the actual Contact.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing, it was going to be all your imagination. And Deborah Hill says that by the time it was coming out, things had just moved on and people wanted to see more stabby stuff.
Yeah.
The Fog is properly, I mean, this seems like a really obvious thing, but it can't be easy pulling off that effect all the time. The way it's lit, it looks
so
properly,
look at that.
Horrible,
that's
doesn't
so
it?
Fucking creepy.
The way that's moving up behind them. They're very M.R. James style ghosts.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
They move horribly.
And there's only one that you see. There's only one you see, one face.
Yeah, the fusty face at the end. And then a man came out of the woods.
You were doing incidental music for our.
We went
Doctor
to
Who.
See the live, unexplained, with Richard MacLean.
Smith, and he didn't say his name once, did he?
He
that
didn't.
Was,
no, he didn't,
the
he didn't
we were
even
say.
For. He just launched into it. So we went to see the book signing of Unexplained, which I have here, which I didn't get. I've actually got a
you've brought the whole book signing.
I have a proof copy of it, which was given to me by Dr. Bill from the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was nice.
And which he got because he was.
Is that signed?
Somebody pinged.
Hello, someone pinged.
Dear, oh dear.
Sorry, I this thought I had that one.
And it's signed.
Oh, it says, and it is. What does it say?
Dear Craig.
No, I think you probably find it says dear.
Dear Craig.
No,
Craig.
I think it says dear.
Craig. Thanks for your interest. Best we ashes. Richard MacLean.
Smith. So he was. So there was no intro, was there?
No.
He was fiddling around with his guitar.
In fact, he walked past us several times and smiled and said hello.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked a bit embarrassed.
And where was this on?
This is at Walston's.
In Sochi Hall Street.
Yeah.
Sochi Hall.
And then he just launched into his story, didn't he?
Yeah.
He does his incidental. He's quite. Perfunctory but alright in central music, which is alright when you listen to it on the podcast. You don't really need to see him performing live.
And the balance of it wasn't great with his voice either.
It was not.
But I enjoyed the name.
But he did, the thing that was quite impressive was that he did his story entirely from memory, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't read it from his book or.
It was one that would trip up, but that was it.
And was this in. Was it very busy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was alright, yeah.
It
was quite busy.
Here by candlelight watching the film?
No, not at all. No, definitely wasn't. And
But as your wife said, as the excellent Rose said, it's quite easy to sort of laugh at him.
Yeah.
I find him slightly amusing. But
and we did that.
The fact is, he has made a huge success out of
the
podcast.
Yeah.
He's done it.
Yeah.
And then she said, fair fucks to him.
Yeah.
He's got the audience.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like I say, it's the book of the podcast of the Wikipedia entries. Because it is interesting, because he doesn't seem to add a great deal to it, does he?
No, he just brings it together in one place and hands it to you.
So back at the film, Jamie's jumped right into bed with Tommy Atkins.
Oh, there's a nice heavy boob there, isn't
there? Yeah, Jamie's looking all right as well.
Yeah. Tommy's got a lovely vest on.
I like good vest.
There's an awful lot of windows there for me having the pumping. So if she was jockey, I'd be outside the window having a real old look.
Do you not think
that's me at the front door?
That's Craig trying to do something music.
It is something that's always sort of occurred to me, this idea.
Sucking
that,
the gut, Tommy.
What do you think they're trying to say about the characters and the fact that she's basically hitchhiked and they're fucking riding the wild baloney pony already.
But
do you not think actually? Because it always occurred to me that I think first of all it's quite daring, because certainly nowadays you'd think, well, hell, man, this weird modern puritanism, the puritanism that if they do that sort of thing, then they deserve it, and it's the sort of scream rules kind of thing. But actually, this is how people actually behave.
Yeah, and also Carpenter's one of the great liberals, so I think his view would be, well, he's all right looking, she's hot, they're at a loose end, they're in a town together. Well, why would you fuck?
But that's what I mean. Exactly, that's how people actually behave.
I think it's also part of the fact that she had by that stage become less gawky and is already moving into majorly hot stage. And so he just thought, hang on a minute,
because it's nearly Trading Places season.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
This is a beautiful shot, isn't it?
Isn't it
do,
lovely,
do you not
yeah.
think this really is really reminiscent when you, because the sound design is lovely and you get that lovely feel. It looks like how it feels.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual in a film to get it so right. But do you not think it sort of reminds you of being, you know, like if you go, in, certainly in Scotland, if you go to the west coast of Scotland or the or slightly northeast, any of those kind of areas, off season,
yeah,
where
nice.
It's like windy and bright. You know, like a 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, lovely.
Just great.
Lovely and fresh.
Yeah.
It looks like something straight out of Ryan's Daughter or something as well. But,
yeah, but actually, something,
times
happens, something happens. Yeah.
Something about that last scene, the radio DJ and the radio program, that kind of strikes me as being slightly Nigel Neal esque as a narrative device.
Yeah, it is like Barty's Party.
Yeah.
I think they. I think
are you
they
speaking
only...
up enough? You sound a bit too relaxed.
I sound great.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't think you have any business being as relaxed as that.
I think the only difference is that with Nigel Neal's usual tropes is that as you kind of know already, is that it's it only happened. Is it 100 years before? 200 years before?
100 years.
100 years,
yeah.
And that's not long enough for Nigel.
Yeah,
no,
that's true.
Like 20,000
yeah.
years ago if it was Nigel Neal.
No, this is
just
the 100th anniversary of the night there.
Nigel.
What's great about this is that the whole fucking town is complicit in what happened. It's built on something rotten.
And Nigel Neal had a hand in the next. In the
yes, he did. So I think
uncredited.
Yeah, so we know that. Carpenter was a Nigel Neal fan.
Oh yeah, I love him. And of course, he credits himself as Martin Quatermass on Prince of Darkness.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And this
can you just point out the excellent parka this lad's wearing?
Yeah, it's a proper parka. Except I'd have probably had that it would have been a blue one.
It's a snorkel.
You tend to be more blue
with a nice orange lining.
I think I had a brown one once, but mostly had blue ones.
We
Saint Anthony, wasn't it?
Lord Anthony.
Yeah.
That house on the water now is really weird. I looked up the town of Inverness, California to see what the locations are like now. They're all almost exactly the same, except that house out in the water, which has been done up like a Russian dacha. And it's got weird, tiny wee onion domes all over it and that, and it looks terrible.
Wow.
It looks like, you know, like it smells like incense and farts.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
because somebody lives in has lived in it who's like a bit hippie-ish, and that means they've got smelly feet and they eat too much brown rice.
Yeah,
which is any brown rice.
Yeah, absolutely, it's ghastly stuff. Should I point out that John Huston's character is called Macon? Mr. Macon, isn't Arthur Macon?
Never occurred to me.
The ghost story writer.
So here we are.
I like the fact they're sort of cutting about together now.
Yeah.
Although I must admit, I probably wouldn't be kicking about down there. Down the beach, I'd probably still be bending the house with Jamie Lee, offering her all manner of fried eggs to keep her in the house.
Nice.
Come on, Jamie Lee.
The last thing.
Have a fried egg.
The last thing Jamie Lee Curtis has got is fried eggs. Boom! Sexism, folks.
Yay.
One of the major benefits of the recent not reboot, but follow on from Halloween. Which we've seen, you haven't seen.
Yeah,
I have not seen this.
Which is tremendous.
Terrific, yeah.
Good.
Really
good
film. Big silly grin on my face all the way through it.
Yeah, it was just great, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and after I had to tell a couple of people to turn their phones off and stop talking, things like that.
Were they quite young?
Yeah.
Is that right?
There was me and our friends Alan and Stuart. And we were in the second row in the seats, and the row in front of us, right from the start of the film, there was a lassie, took a picture of the title card, and all the way through it was taking pictures of like herself for Snapchat posts. And when I leaned in and said, could you actually just put your phone away now, try to give me like a pure dirty look, like, do you know, turned around to do that, and then obviously just turned around and saw the fucking Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah.
Or turn your fucking phone off.
Quite right, too.
Anyway, one of the unintended bonuses of the film is there's just been a phenomenal amount of interviews of with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, which is great.
And she's been talking away about all sorts of things. And she's been making it clear. She's done it before. She's not new. She's said it before. Halloween got her no work at all.
Yeah.
Yes.
As she says, in the year or 2 years after Halloween, I think this was 3 years later.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, two since the release. It looks very Scottish, that.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that. It's just, well, it is Inverness. California.
Oh.
But to the extent that when I first saw this, I thought they must have shot some of it.
Yeah. Is that a Mini Moke she's driving, by the way?
I don't know. Is it not one of those Volkswagen-y things?
Yeah, it's a fucking rattler of a car.
Yeah. Anyway, Jamie Lee, as I feel I could call her now. In the 2 years, I think she said she got one episode of The Love Boat with her mother and one episode of Charlie's Angels, where she played a lesbian golf pro. And she says she wasn't billed as a lesbian golf pro, but she played her as one.
A woman playing golf is just that, isn't it? That's how you play it.
It was only when they made this that she became a star.
Yeah.
Because having had done two films with roughly the same sort of
vibe from
her, that she said that people finally clicked that this is what she did and what she could do.
Yeah.
And that she became a star. So she credits The Fog as the thing that kick-started her career. Which is a bit counterintuitive.
Yeah, you'd have thought it was Halloween.
Because although this was successful, it wasn't like Halloween was phenomenally successful.
Yeah.
So what's so good about the new
film? And there's our mum.
What's so good about the new film?
Can I just say, first of all, a couple of things.
Yes,
one is, these two are brilliant.
The relationship between
the
two is
really funny,
the
sarcastic
yeah.
younger woman. The younger woman, interestingly enough, is also the woman that's in Halloween 3. Bong.
Her. Oh, so it is. I've never noticed that before.
She's the woman, I think we said that last year, 2 years ago.
Oh.
She is actually
well,
the woman
noticed it before then.
Who, when she was a teenager,
I've forgotten. Yep.
Was in a relationship with Woody Allen. She was about 18 or so, and is kind of the inspiration for the Mario Hemingway character in Manhattan.
Oh, except they had to make her even younger.
Wow. So what's good about the new Halloween film, Craig?
I think it's made with an awful lot of love and understanding of what makes the original tick.
Uh-huh.
It's respectful of it.
Uh-huh.
It is also, however, its own film.
Yeah.
It's shot with a real knowledge of what makes the original work, which I really like about it. Michael is once again just a sheer force of nature
and
played properly.
Yeah.
And she is tremendous in it. I mean, she is absolutely brilliant.
Good. There is one scene in particular.
Uh-huh.
Is that the restaurant?
Yeah. Oh, she's so good. Because
in a proper world where they give Oscars for proper films, she'd have got it for that scene.
Because actually, it's a bit like the only decent bits of The Exorcist, which are the only decent bits of The Exorcist are the stuff about, you know, a priest in crisis.
Yeah, great stuff.
And the stuff, you could have made the entire film of Halloween, the new one, just about Jamie Lee Curtis. You wouldn't even have had to have Michael Myers in it.
Because it's about her trauma and her PTSD and what it's done to her. Yeah, it's great.
Because
she's been waiting for him to get out, isn't she?
We're getting a bit spoilery now, so we're not going to do that.
Well, the review that I've read says that basically what it does is it switches the role of the hunter.
That's
murdered.
A spoiler.
Okay. Well, that's in the review. So.
Yeah, you don't need to spoil it.
I haven't seen the film, so I don't know if it.
Yeah, but
it
doesn't mean you. I mean, you can spoil films without having seen them.
Not if you don't know, because they might set that up in the
first
film.
Well, now we've got to put a spoiler warning
they
on
might.
The stuff of this. Are you happy now? Are you happy now?
Isn't that a lovely church?
And it's not even a set. It's exactly.
Anyway, now I've spoiled it. You can say what you're going to say.
Well, are we doing that now? Have we just put a spoiler warning on it? No, because that's...
No, I don't want to do that.
No.
No,
anyway,
that's not what you're about, Chris and
so
I.
So that's not in the first reel, then?
Look at the lighting there.
The point I was going to be, that was non-spoiler.
You know, I was trying to be really positive with you tonight. I didn't even sneer at your I'm known as Jack shit.
I did.
I was trying really fucking hard, and then you basically just slapped me right in the face with your tiny bobby.
That's are you happy now? You know what's great about that scare there, when he comes out there, is it just doesn't have
a noise
on it.
Yeah. But it's also what happens with priests, I believe, they come at you from the dark like that.
Or you from behind. The
This is a great scene.
It's like I saw it, we watched a trailer last night for a film called... You know how films that are always called things like The Possession Of are always terrible?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was called The Possession Of Somebody, and it was to do with a... It was to do with a lassie who died during an exorcism, and then the body comes back to life in the morgue, and the lassie...
Is it The Autopsy of Jane Doe?
No, it's called The Possession Of Some... Possession Of Somebody's Name. It's not out yet.
Alright.
The point I was going to make is, you can tell from the trailer that every single scare in it is a jump scare.
Right.
Which is just cheap.
Yeah.
But no, I
recommend The Autopsy of Jane Doe if you've not seen it. It's fantastic.
I was going to say the best thing about... I think that one of the best things about the new Halloween is the fact that it pays off. There are things that happen through it.
Yeah.
Which we won't tell you.
Oh, that's fine.
That pay off. There are no parts of it that are left hanging.
Right.
And the things that happen through it very cleverly, very competently, you think are going in one direction, actually take in another.
Yeah.
And it's just great.
And it mirrors stuff from the first one nicely without being too cute.
There's a couple of little contrivances in it, but you know, that's the way it goes.
One of the other things that I like about, I want to come to this in a second very quickly, one of the things that that's had confirmed that someone said is that, you know, the English couple that are kicking about doing the podcast?
The sort of serial types.
Yeah. Do you know what she says as they're going to the gas station?
No.
She asks for the loo when she gets in.
Oh, yeah,
as
they're
approaching it, she says, I need a number two.
Oh, really?
And someone, I know someone who's confirmed it now, to the sort of second time, and she does say that.
Wow.
This I like because he gets more and more upset and disgusted. It's a really great bit of acting by Hal Holbrook.
Yeah, and it's really nicely juxtaposed with this scene.
Yeah, it's cut between the two scenes.
Discovering what's happened on the ship. Yeah.
So did Carpenter reuse the same actors quite a lot in his films?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He
seems
to have quite a cadre of actors.
Very much so, yeah. And why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? Precisely.
But probably more so his... There is a lot of usage of rep company, like Kurt Russell gets used for a few. Obviously, Jamie Lee Curtis, Tommy Atkins, Donald Pleasence, especially.
Yeah.
But not as much as the crew.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
There's a lot more of the crew gets used time and time again. Yeah. And as Deborah Hill says, it just makes it so much better and easier because everybody knows what they're buying into.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
You have somebody who doesn't quite get it.
Yeah.
And
it's a shock.
And nobody would have got rich filmmaking
but they'd have made a nice living. And he's probably got richer in recent years than he has then because he owns the properties.
No, but I mean things like you know, like on big Hollywood films, like the production manager will get a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to get rich signing on to make a character film, but they do it because. They want to do it.
Yeah, they
was he a good dude to work for then?
I think so, yeah. He's always had a very good... I've never heard anything bad about him.
Right. Uh-huh.
They say that he doesn't suffer fools.
Right. Uh-huh.
So he wouldn't fucking like you.
No, that's true. Yeah, but professionals like Chris and I
he'd like
fucking
you too,
love
would
us.
Yeah, like you guys, would he?
He'd be phoning us up going, bling, bling. Hi, it's John here.
I hear you're the... You get 20 club.
Good guy.
The good guy. I hear you're the good...
Guy.
That's it, yeah.
Here's a good scare coming.
And you've got moustaches.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, we have one moustache between us.
Is this one contiguous moustache? So, anyway.
Always expect... See, in an old film like this, you would get a jump scare when someone's telling a ghost story.
Yeah, yeah.
Something they riff off on Doug Soldiers, for instance.
Absolutely. Well. Also, I think in modern times, the jumps, that a scare would be a jump scare, but also be in the foreground.
Mm.
Because they think they're being clever if they push something into the frame in the foreground.
Videos, isn't it?
Rah!
You know.
Or they just annoy me.
Yeah, I agree with you. Whereas then, it was nice wide screen, nice big wide angle lens.
Yeah.
So you've got a real depth of field and something in the background.
There was a nice moment, talking about sort of jump scare tropes in Doctor Who at the Weekend, where Bradley Walsh.
This is more spoiler.
No, it's not a spoiler.
Watch.
Yeah.
There you go. Look at that.
Whoa!
I like the fact that actually something makes it unlock.
Yeah. So no, watch.
Watch, Jack.
Right, chillax.
We are meant to watch the film.
Well, at points.
Yeah, but if two of us are telling you to watch it, you should watch it. That sounds like John Carpenter rattling away there.
You right there, John?
Quantum physics.
Okay.
Hang on.
There we go. You think it's all over?
Oh, it's all fine now.
Where's now? Nick Castle again with a wee lump of pork stuck to his face.
Yeah, so, Bradley Walsh, looking in the mirror. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah.
He sees something that isn't there behind him and then turns around and it's still there.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a nice moment, yeah. Like everything in that, this is the writing is in the UK episode. Everything in the house is lovely.
Very is that a joke about anarchy in the UK?
Yes.
Sort of.
It is.
Sort of. Yes. Although it made me think that it might have been set in the 70s, which would have been even better. But, I like the fact that it's just set in Sheffield, apart from
that. But actually, doing it in the 70s would be more expensive than doing it on a different planet.
Yeah, that's true.
So not really, because you could just have turned the lights out.
So you haven't seen the episode?
I had no black people in it. It'd been absolutely fine. I've not seen the last two, not for any confrontational points of view or anything. I've just not got around to watching them yet.
But we've all seen the Inside Number 9?
Yes.
Chris, what was your take on it?
I enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
How many stars out of five?
3.5. I didn't enjoy it as much as Craig. There was one aspect of it that I just don't... It kind of pulled me out of the narrative of it a wee bit.
Okay. Care to elaborate?
Would that be a bit spoilery, should we?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I think it's...
I think if you didn't watch it last night, hell mend you.
Yeah, I'd say so. Go on.
Can we just wonder at the beauty of Spivey Point, by the way?
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
You really feel like you're there, don't you?
Yeah. Tell you what, though, you don't want to leave something in your car.
Well, that's what Adrienne Barbeau always says about this, because they used to do these shots, and she said it was fine for her, but then the crew had to carry everything up and down these stairs.
Wow. Bloody hell.
Fucking nightmare.
And I think there's 365 steps.
Oh, fuck that.
That's great.
I'd be knackered walking down those stairs.
But I've realised recently I get quite frightened walking down
those stairs. Yeah, I was going to say I'd be a bit freaked out.
Yeah, I don't like walking downstairs as much.
Yeah, I agree with you. So what was the bit that took you out of Inside Nine?
I thought it was a bit odd that the news footage was fired into it, archive news footage was fired into it, because I couldn't understand why that would happen. I know the ghosts were supposed to have taken control and things like that, but I just thought it took me a bit out of it. It seemed a bit too contrived.
So was it just the archive news or any of the archive stuff? So it's like the Bobby Davro bit.
Well, no, the Bobby Davro bit at the start didn't bother me, because I thought they could have got away with that, because that was so old and whatever, that, and it seemed at the time so random.
Yeah.
That might have been cut across or picked up something, whatever. But when they describe one incident happening, like the fire, and then the tape of the news footage of it played later, I just couldn't understand why that would happen. And completely not anybody's fault other than mine, I just was so happy to see a piece of news footage with Anthony Wilson. I just forgot about the story. It's Anthony Wilson.
Were we meant to think that the Bobby Davro bit happened?
I've always found this quite upset, quite scary when the water leaks from the plank of wood.
But I think
it's when the voice slows down.
But I think I've said to you before, the things that scare me most is it's broad daylight, there's people there, it still happens.
Yeah.
That freaks me out.
So when we mentioned the Bobby Davro bit happened at Granada TV Studios?
Yes.
Because did it? I'm not sure it did.
But he says that. He says it when he's reading it out, the different incidents that happened in the studios.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if that actually did happen at in real life, that was all. Craig, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I'm willing to be seen as an unthinking poltroon, but I 5 out of 5, absolutely loved it. I mean, I'm a big, 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 big fan. And I wrote about this today on kind of the Facebook discussions with friends and that about it. I love them so much because all the things that I grew up loving in terms of TV and film and books and whatnot, they did too. Uh-huh. And they have talents way, way beyond fools like us. and they're able to do something with it that is just amazing. And I'm really, I feel quite grateful for them.
Yep.
I feel blessed that they're there doing all this stuff. Uh-huh. They never let me down.
Well, sorry, just to continue that point, I don't want to interrupt because I want to augment what you're saying.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because it's that, but it's also the fact that what's really admirable about them is that they've found themselves with the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
Yes. And not only are they doing it, but they've chosen to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what's so pleasing about it.
And they've found an audience for it.
That's what's so pleasing about it.
And
actually quite affirming.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I think one of the things that is hugely commendable about them is that they do it properly, and they don't just assume, as I think...
There's never wrong kind of
nostalgia
with them.
Anyway, you had
finished it's always
so
very
authentic. I think we were talking about this, I think you said there were one or two, but to me, in the five series of Inside Number 9, which may be the best thing as a group they've all done from all the disparate parts of it, The only one to me that's ever been slightly weak was in the first series, and it was the one about the breath and the balloon, which I could kind of see what they were doing, but it wasn't as good as some of the rest of them. Six Must Die.
I think the very first one's a wee bit shaky as well.
Sardines.
The Sardines one.
Yeah.
No, I do like it, but it's not... I said to you when we were talking about this quite recently, what I think is really interesting is that one of my very... Now, you expect that it wouldn't hit its stride till the series three, you know, a normal series, but actually one of my very favourite ones is in the first series, which I now can't remember.
Is that the one where there's almost no dialogue? Is it that one? Because I remember you saying you like that.
Oh, no, I love the... But that's what I mean. So that's a great one, the Mischief one. The Quiet Night Inn is fantastic. Yeah. No, it's the oh shit, I can't remember. What are the other ones in the first series?
There's Tom and Jerry.
What's that
the one with
that?
The tramp that comes to see?
That's the
fabulous
one.
That's
the one with
the tramp
that
he brings
and
into the
girlfriend.
House, and then you're not quite sure what's going on
with Conleth Hill in it. Yeah. And actually, I think for normal humdrum people, you wouldn't hit that level until the end of your second or third series. And that's like the third or fourth episode.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I love For All That, and last night I just watched it from 10 o'clock, I watched it live, and I was really thrilled how they pulled it off. We were genuinely taken in, the three of us in my house, to the extent that when they put on the backup tape, I was actually saying to my son, well, you might as well just go to bed then, there's no point in staying up. And then, but there was a few things that then just tipped us off.
Yeah.
And Ben was the first one that pointed out, as my son, that them putting on the one where there's no speech in it struck him as so.
Yeah.
And I noticed the music was different because it's Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto played in that, and it's not. And I thought, that's odd.
Mm.
And then we started to, and my wife kept saying, I think they're fooling us.
Uh-huh.
And I was sort of going, no, they wouldn't be allowed to do that. Yeah. Almost. And then, of course, it turned out they were. So I was genuinely taken in by it because I was so upset when it went wrong.
Right.
Because they'd built up, and it's a great bit of misdirection, they'd built up for so long. We're doing a live one, and it's really scary how you do it live and all that. Yeah. And then when the sound went,
it's
a few
EastEnders because they keep fucking it up.
Yeah.
And so I was. I'm happy to say, call me all the idiots in the world. I was totally hoodwinked by it, and I loved it. And even after that, I thought the way they brought in, there was a bit of Nigel Neal sort of stuff in there. There was a good bit of sort of Lovecraft. There was like a Ramsey Campbell feel to it.
Uh-huh.
There was Ghostwatch. All those things. I just thought it was magnificent. When I finish here tonight. When I get home, I might well watch it again, just to start watching for all the stuff that's in it that I didn't notice.
Well, like I say, I watched it with Amsterdam, we enjoyed it, but I think of the series of the sort of seasonally specials, I don't think it was as good as Devil at Christmas.
Ah, that was great too, yeah. Jack? Sorry.
I did like it a lot.
Liked it. I think the thing is that, in part for the reasons that you were saying, which is that they... It feels like they have an affinity with the kinds of things that we all like, or rather, we have an affinity with the kinds of things they all like. I think I thought as soon as I knew they were doing a live one, I thought, right, they're going to fuck around with the convention of TV.
Well, I thought that as well.
And so as soon as there was a bit, really quite early on where the sound drops for about a second.
That's right, yeah.
And at that point, I thought, okay, this is what's going to happen. It's going to fall off the air. So therefore, I wasn't surprised by any of that. And as soon as it fell off the air, that's what I expected to happen. So I didn't have the pleasure of being fooled by it.
Mm-hmm.
But the execution of it was still very good.
You know, actually...
this is good too. There's an autopsy scene, a creepy autopsy
scene.
This is
a pickup.
Was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It would almost be better if... for us, not for Craig, obviously. if they hadn't said it was going to be live,
yeah,
and had made it almost like. Yes.
Did you feel, were you primed for something like that to happen then? Yeah, okay. I think the only thing that is live was the shot of Reese and Steve in the dressing room.
Because of the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there was nothing else live in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't think there was anything live.
I think that bit was live. Just because they're flicking through the channels, and yes,
I just
they
don't know how you would insert a live piece into a broadcast.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work technically. I mean, I suppose you could do it, but fucking
you'd
hell,
have to
I mean,
cut.
You'd really
station
be
to a separate output to do
yeah.
it.
I don't know.
You'd but really
it would
be
rude. I'm telling you.
I think that was live there. Otherwise, they must have superimposed the, which they could have done. They must have superimposed the live telly feed because the BBC News bulletin, I'm sure, was what was on BBC One at the time. Well, now
I think it's probably more likely that you've created,
you filled that in
for yourself,
possibly.
Yeah,
but they were talking about the election results, which
yeah,
was a new story.
How
of
much
the day.
Detail was in it? That's like
yeah.
like a psychic, you know, saying to you,
you
think you've done,
yeah,
you think
yeah, yes,
they've told you everything when they've not.
Yeah. Mm. yeah,
they knew what was happening in the news that day.
Yeah,
so it's easy enough to have a 5 second of,
which,
well, the election result has taught us blah blah blah.
Because you could have done a crash edit.
Yeah,
right up until
yeah, you could have yeah
an hour.
Yeah, you could have taken
it
the previous yeah, you could have taken the previous hours.
There you go. There's the body coming up.
From
yeah, absolutely. You could have cut it out of.
Yeah,
you know,
actually, that, I bet you that's what it was. That's well deduced.
You could have
well
cut it out
deduced.
But the other thing
the
is, I'm
for somebody who works at a hospital, you're
yeah,
really up on
bad,
the shit.
But
bad,
the,
yeah.
the one thing that I do wonder about that is whether BBC editorial guidelines would allow them to say it's live if there's no live content there.
I think you can, I think that only covers.
I don't
not
know.
That I don't,
anything
I don't
about know
any
about
of
these
this.
Things, but I think within the context of a drama,
I think it's okay.
You'd be all right.
I think it's just news.
I can imagine
these
editorial guidelines.
That's purely because the editorial guidelines are on their website, and I just happen to read them one day.
Yeah, yeah. And you're just coming up with shit that you're making
I'm not
up.
Coming up with shit. I'm postulating that I do think
yeah,
that
but
it was live.
Yeah, it's postulating.
We'll find
out. I don't think
out.
Technically it could have been live.
I think it was live. I think that bit was live.
Yeah, you're going to be wrong.
Well, we'll see. Someone's going to be wrong. I was right about Waterman.
Yeah, but it's
week.
Usually you.
That's true. Right about, Sorry, can we just...
I said Ottoman was on BBC
no,
One.
Yeah, just
no,
interject here a second. You're positing your superior position
on this
on the phrase...
Yeah. I was right about
Ottoman. I was right about Ottoman.
Yeah, that's Lily.
Fuck me.
Here we go. That's how we drive through Glencoe again. That looks like the cover of the Unexplained book.
Wow.
Anyway, we all enjoy it.
There you go. Hey, look.
I don't even think the topography's that great on this book, but it's not that bad either.
It might be better on the final. This is just a...
Yeah. I remember thinking about it when we were at the launch, thinking, that topography's not great.
You
it's not
bit,
awful.
You are a bit of a minky manky cunt, though, aren't you? Let's be perfectly honest.
Minky manky cunt?
Yeah, you're a bit sort of minky manky, minky minky dinky. You know what I mean?
You should have used Cooper Black.
Yeah, that's the sort of shit you would come out with.
Yeah, good
anyway,
point.
Back at the film.
Back yeah,
what's
at the film.
On this from?
Right, they're now having their 100th anniversary
celebration. Yeah. And Janet Leigh. You know what's nice about this as well? The way they. Is that Janet Leigh, who's like the mayor.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
But she's not. She's like Larry Vaughan.
Yeah, she's cutting
she's a,
about...
She's a working mate. She's
yeah,
a working
absolutely.
Person
yeah.
who's the mayor.
Yeah.
She's not like the local bigwig or anything.
She's got quite big hair, though. This is only... It's less than 20 years after Psycho.
Mm.
She
yeah.
looks really old there,
mm-hmm.
doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She's very thin.
She's great, Janet Leigh, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely. Mrs. Williams as well. Because her husband's gone missing, you see.
Yeah, he's in the fishing
yeah.
boat, isn't he?
I was telling Jack that because he's a bit of a cog.
Which bit?
Just all of it.
Okay.
Isn't your mum,
so all of a cog.
Because your mum thinks you're a dick as well, doesn't she?
It's been heavily implied that she thinks that.
Yeah.
She did ask someone else whether they thought I was a dick.
Yeah, but she
in a
clearly
way
wasn't
she,
asking from
she,
a neutral
I don't,
point
I don't
of
think
view.
She, I don't think she was conducting some sort of research.
She wasn't trying to rule things out just
yeah.
quickly.
No, she was looking for...
I think she was trying to illuminate the path.
There's an awful lot of stuff in your sitting room today. What's all this business, mate?
No, there's just stuff that needs to be cleared out upstairs and shifted upstairs.
Ah.
Do you want us to do that before we go away?
Sorry. So.
Nice bar, that. Working man's bar.
Mm-hmm.
Big gay barman.
here's something else that happened between the last recording and this, is we received our first piece of fan art.
Oh, fan art, yeah.
Yay. Awesome.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was by.
Daniel, wasn't it?
It was Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daniel, we loved it, mate. Thank you.
And I liked the fact that...
And thank you for not making it slasher now.
Yes. Yeah, or shipping. That was a phrase you hadn't heard, wasn't it, when we were talking
about... Yeah, what does it mean again?
Shipping is... I think it's
shipping.
Yes, that's right, yeah. It's where you make up fan stories where characters...
Get it all.
...shake each other. So, what do you reckon?
I don't want anything to do with that. And thank you, Daniel, for that. Yeah. You notice that Cohen is a wee batty head.
Yeah, I think that is him, yeah.
It is, yeah, it is.
Yeah, that definitely
he's
is.
He's a wee crazy bat head.
Yeah. And you're
holding
him. How
many hours a day is Adrian Barbeau? My name's Nick Castle, of course. That's his character name. How many hours a day is she on?
Well, the thing is, she puts on... She goes into automation.
Yeah, and she's about 6 hours a night, isn't she?
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems to be a 24-hour station.
Playing what has to be called...
Yeah, shit.
...some quite shitty music.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
It's even worse than play Misty for Me with these crappy old
tunes.
Oh,
God, yeah. But it's kind of the closest... It's, we've said before about, you know, discos, restaurants, television, game shows, they never look proper.
Yeah.
But it's quite a good recreation of a little radio station,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I like it, yeah.
How do you know?
Well, because I've seen other films.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jackson Ford. Did you hear that?
I don't know. Halloween night, isn't it?
Let him be.
Could you see that?
I can't. Jackson Ford. No, he's not.
This guy's really horny.
That last bit was you, I know that.
See the guy from the Coast Guard station.
I meant the other guy, the good guy one. He's the fun.
Can that be him?
What's that?
Oh, is the fog coming after the Coast Guard guy? He's a very horny man. I don't mean I find him sexy. I mean he's desperate.
His character's
desperate to get his horn. He's a wee bit sex bestie.
Yeah. If he was in a cartoon, he'd be a wolf slapping the top of a table in a restaurant.
Absolutely. And his eyes going, check out Superfly sitting there. Bitch Ghost Guard. Look at the height of the boy. He's actually just going straight
he's just bought to a frame.
What's his name? Roger. Roger the Ghost Guard. So often the way.
Roger the Noir.
Mind you, Colin or whatever his name is, the Coast Guard there, has got a brilliant Coast Guard's jumper on.
He does.
It is a love. I was just admiring that jumper, actually.
He's taking the effort to take the shirt collar out of it.
It reminds me of the jumper that Freddie Mannering was wearing in that episode of Grange Hill when they were going up the canal and he found the water and he had to wear someone else's jumper. And everybody laughed at him because Freddie Mannering was the cool guy. But it's a nice jumper. Do you remember that episode?
It must be shit being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for chucking that in there, James.
It must be really shit being here. That was Professor Christopher Freeling behind the bar there. He's crazy fuzzy hair.
Nice time.
I think we should bring back the collar outside the shirt like that. I don't think you could contain a collar of that size with the jumper.
That's a mighty
look
collar.
At that. That's a mighty collar.
Quite far back as well.
It is, yeah.
Which means he must have the top couple of buttons undone. Which means the top of his bottom of his neck is a bit scratchy.
Yeah. Especially
with that jumper. I don't want
Do you
that.
Still get jaggedy arse wool jumpers?
I don't know.
I tend to go for a cotton mix these days.
Yeah, I like a nice
pair. Yeah.
I just remember those jumpers you used to get when you were a kid that used to feel like they were actually eating you.
Yeah.
The jumpers. That's a film nobody made. No. I should have done. Yeah.
What's wrong with these
people? The sheer terror of trying to take it off. And get caught around the big
scratch.
Napper. Oh, horrendous.
Especially your big napper.
That makes me quite panicky.
Yeah, I never liked that.
Oh.
Dumb with that shit.
Yeah, dumb with that shit.
Or pulling on a jumper that's a wee bit too tight over a shirt and spending ages trying to get your shirt sleeves
down.
Smooth
out
underneath it.
Because you have to hold the secret, isn't it? Is
you
have,
to,
you
have
hold
to hold the cuff.
Yeah, while
really
you're putting it on.
I like to give my jumper a good stretch before I put it on just to make sure.
Because then you spend ages trying to straighten it out and you feel like you've got to take your shirt and pull it back. Never. If you don't get it right first time, you may as well take it off.
Yeah.
And you get so wound up, you just want to go out and kill women.
You can feel it all day. And then the next minute, you're driving a lorry down to Ipswich.
Do you know? I'm so angry.
So angry.
And irate. I don't need the jumper anymore because I'm not
warm. No, you're warm because
I'm totally warm
because you're a white working class man and
nobody
listens to
nobody's listening to you. Nobody listens
because you
nobody listens, Jack, to white men
with their jumpers.
What a minority!
White heterosexual
men
in
you
in who earn a reasonable living.
The world
has no interest in what they've got to say.
Yeah.
Let's make cunts great again.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should be making content for the likes of me.
Yeah. And then just because you're a bit violent, they start taking your kids away from you, not letting you have access to them.
Yeah.
Where's the justice there? Right,
there's no you need for justice.
And
just because
you didn't even make the jump in the first place, did you?
No, I know.
Yep.
It's the jumper's fault.
Oh, I'm glad we got that out.
Yeah.
Think we should put that one out, or should we maybe just edit that?
No, I think that's fine.
Is that okay after the Patrick Trout and stuff?
We took the confessions out earlier.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
So Jumper Man's about to die, which is a bit sad.
And we've already dropped that one Philip Green did with us last week. So
that's right.
Well, the Skype line from Arizona wasn't great.
Here we go.
He paid us in BHS vouchers. That's all right.
Yes, that's right. Do you remember when right? I know that there's that man out there on the internet who didn't like us talking about shops. Uh-huh. You can go fuck yourself. BHS always had a really
brilliant... Was that Philip Green?
No. BHS always had a brilliant...
I don't like you talking about shops.
Oh, here you go. There's the man, DJ.
BHS,
to be fair, always had a brilliant lighting section. The one in Edinburgh, which was downstairs.
Yeah, BHS, famous for its lights.
Huge light section. It was lovely. Lamps and everything.
Go on again.
Back in the day, the BHS in Edinburgh was actually quite a nice shop.
Was it?
Yeah.
Where was that?
It's on Princes Street.
Oh, I don't remember the BHS.
Back when it was a proper country with BHS, with Littlewoods, with the best cafe ever.
Did it have proper escalator?
A massive.
Littlewoods Cafe was a great cafe. Yeah, they had an amazing breakfast.
And sausage and chips and
things. Yeah, really good.
Big photographs of them up.
Used to be that big Littlewoods in Argyle Street.
Aye.
They did a great breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Food photography isn't as good as
the Canda. That never had a cafe, did it?
The what?
CNA.
The Canda?
Yeah, CNA. Canda.
Oh yeah, I never called it that.
No,
I see any.
Don't remember them ever having that.
Canda.
Now even Fraser's is going.
Yeah.
No, that's all right.
Sports Directable.
One
of
them shut.
The one in Glasgow's all right.
Yeah, one of them was shut. Debenhams will be going.
Not that it matters, frankly, because the one in Glasgow's just like any other fucking shop.
Yeah.
I was watching. So I'd like to get this on record, by the way.
Go for it. Go for it. Get off your chest.
I was watching.
555-2131. Oh, by the way, you see the number in inside number 9 when he said it's 444-4244.
Yeah.
Do you know whose number that is?
Whose?
It's Pops!
Oh, is it?
It's Pops' number. Yeah. My friend Kevin Shelbourne pointed that out. Well done, sir.
Wow.
I was watching the making of, or the story of Are You Being Served?
Oh, wow.
The other day. It's on every now and again.
Did you buy that?
What?
The making of Are You Being Served?
No, it was just on the telly.
Was it free?
I'd say you're all done really well, good. But that's really not the case.
That's good.
But in any case, it's quite a nice wee documentary. There's lots of good stuff in it. But Russell T Davies is in it.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's obligatory.
Does it get wrong with him?
Because he's... because there's a sort of gay character in it, so you get Russell T Davies in.
Yeah.
And he's largely right about stuff. So, like, he says that, Mr. Humphries is clearly a gay character, and the only thing that bothers him was when David Croft and General Lloyd would say, oh, he's not really a gay character, because he clearly is.
Uh-huh.
He's rightly annoyed about sort of gay liberation people at the time and even later and now, saying that it's, it's a cartoon character and all that, because... there are very, very many gay men like Mr. Humphries.
Yeah.
But there was more than one at Fraser's.
They are all cartoon characters anyway.
There was a man who worked in one of the concessions on the ground floor in Fraser's. We used to call the Nimble Man. And he was Mr. Humphries.
The Nimble Man.
The Nimble Man. However...
Did he glide when he walked?
No, he didn't glide. No? He bounced.
Oh, really?
There was a few people around. There was the Shark. He wasn't a gay character, but he was another guy that worked on the ground floor. Ian, the Shark.
Do you remember the guy in the canteen?
He was a fucking great guy.
At the hospital that I used to call Snake Hips.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Hips like a racing snake. Yeah. No, the Shark was this guy who worked in menswear in Fraser's.
That's a great joke, that, by the way.
Yeah, menswear. I used to answer the phone in the grotto. Menswear. Because they called him the Shark, because other people would be getting a sale, and then they would go away to put the stuff back that they weren't getting,
uh-huh.
and then the shark would go in and take the sale.
Bastard, yeah.
He was a great guy. Anyway, but there's a point. But the point I'm making is that Russell T. Davies says at one point, or the last thing he says, I think, is that he doesn't understand why people say that they know shops like Are You Being Served, or it was based on the real shop, because there was never a store like Are You Being Served, like Grace Brothers. Yeah, there was.
Yeah,
and it was Fraser's.
Yeah.
It was, because it was exactly like that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they didn't do like musical numbers at the end of the night, but the interaction of the characters. Grace Brothers, I mean, certainly the first series is almost like a fucking documentary.
Also,
here comes the fog.
Excuse me, he should know better, because being where he's from, there was another one. There was one that shot, is it Jowells or something, that was in Cardiff?
Jowetts,
it was exactly the same.
Yeah.
I think it's recently closed, actually. Very sad.
Is it not Jowetts that's in Rose?
Yes. Yeah.
The first episode of
it. Exactly.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah, it's a nice shop. Yeah. It was a nice shop.
And it was a House of Fraser store.
Yeah.
Because it's got the same. Yeah. It's got the same sale signs.
Yeah.
Gosh, that really dates that episode, doesn't it? Having a department store, you wouldn't put a character in a department store now, I don't think.
No, she would just stay on the internet. Oh, it's really warm in here, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's very cold outside.
It's cold outside.
Well, it's nice though. It's hints of a proper winter to come. Yeah, I hope so. I always feel a bit sorry for wee Granny Murray here.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it?
Much,
yeah,
isn't
I think
it?
It's a bit brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's good. You know, the film throws the old granny under a bus.
Mm-hmm. So anyway,
she's probably a mean old bastard anyway.
Yeah.
She's probably
stealing all her money.
Sounds German. She's probably nasty.
She's probably a Nazi. Yeah. I think that's actually Orson Welles from The Stranger.
So something I learned.
Just fell off the bell tower.
Watch this.
Fell off the bell tower, put on a nice cardi, and then just ran off into the dark.
Lost 10 stone in the process.
Is she going to buy it?
She does the stupid thing of saying, no, it's all fine.
It's just fog and lights.
Well, speaking of fog and lights.
Here we go.
Oh dear. I'll come to that in a second.
It's
a bit weird, that, isn't it? No, it's just like, yeah, but it's too dangerous over here, but I'm going to go outside. So it's actually, she gets killed for being stupid.
Wow.
So that's all right.
That's
I like the way they drop onto her like a pack of sharks.
Would you like a shark with that, sir?
Do some lovely shark and tie sense.
Speaking of smoke and lights and... women being inappropriately touched. I watched the Studio 54 documentary the other day. I don't know if it's. I saw it on our website. So I don't know what the release of it is. It's called Studio 54. Wow, it's fantastic.
So, I mean, this is something that's kind of passed me by. It was a big disco in New York, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's quite a cultural touch point.
I know, but plus it's still the disco, so it's not that much of a cultural touch.
No, it is. No, it really is.
I know Warhol and all that went there. But.
No, it's far more than that. But the
go on, how, in what way?
Well, because it's one of those points in time where something happens that completely changes the direction of an entire area after it.
Was Lea Sayre there?
It's a perfectly reasonable question.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable question.
New York in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's a disco guy, isn't he, Leo?
Like that? He was a disco singer in the 70s. If he'd said to him that the French Revolution was Leo Sayre, there, you'd have a point in pulling that.
Well, put it that way.
Face
put
of mocking credulity.
Seismic change.
Finally, the picture of Andy Warhol and Leo Sayre, and I'll buy it off
you. Yeah, there you go. Seismic change in history. Leo Sayre.
Anyway, the fact that all that stuff doesn't really matter.
Loads of stuff made him feel like dancing. What matters?
The documentary itself, it's an hour and a 90-minute documentary. It's a fantastic documentary. Uh-huh. And it's well worth digging out.
Okay.
The description of New York at the time and how they got it open and the building and then how they managed to make it work. What went wrong.
Yep.
There's characters involved because Roy Cohen was involved in it. In a big way, then how they're going to jail, and then what happened afterwards. It's just a fantastic documentary.
Isn't there some kind of intersection with the Southern Sam murders, or am I misremembering? I seen
San Francisco.
Was it? Okay.
No, it wasn't. So it was
Summer of Sam.
Yeah, that was New York.
I seem to think that there
was because there was that
Zodiac's
film.
Based in San Francisco.
He's not the Zodiac killer.
He's not the Son of Sam. Yeah, Son of Sam's the guy who's...
No, oh, sorry, I think it's Summer of Sam.
Summer of Sam is a film about the Son of Sam.
Yeah.
Whose dog talked to him and told him to kill for.
Right,
and I think it was running about that time, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Because that's
when was that, 77?
Seven, yeah, that's what the film is all about, the sort of disco.
That's a wee bit before, but I think Studio 50 was like 78 to 81.
Was it?
It was only open for 3 years.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, as the people, you know, like Steve Brissati and whatever, in its original form, it was only open for 3 years. Then it got bought by, like, a corporation.
Didn't Donald Trump used to go there?
I doubt it. I doubt they'd have let him in.
Wow.
Because they used to have things like nights where they wouldn't let...
going in land.
Where they wouldn't let anybody in.
Yeah, I've been to places like that. The Gallagher in Edinburgh used to be like that.
No, I mean, generally nobody.
Right.
They would have like half a dozen people because it was to maintain this sort of exclusivity.
Oh, right. Is it because people were in trainers?
No, they were like deliberately sort of random to keep everybody, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, I just recommend you watch it.
Okay.
But there's an unspoken thing running all the way through it that it'd be interesting if people pick up on.
You know that cliched line that people say, oh, everyone can remember the time when a dog ran free in the playground, yeah, when you were at school, and people, it's like a Peter Kayism. What are you putting this face for?
Well, to be fair, ample is
well, just because I discovered a nuance there which I didn't realise, is that most people can give you an anecdote when someone at work discovered that someone had done a shit either in the sink or on the toilet seat. It's amazing. This came up as a conversation topic at work today, and everyone who is involved in the conversation could cite an example of someone.
Yeah, was one of those people Martin?
No, it wasn't Martin.
Because Martin has a fund of anecdotes about his shite longer than the fucking express train to Coatbridge.
But I didn't realise that this was a shared
Martin has a fund of anecdotes about his shites bigger than anyone I've ever met in my entire life.
But I didn't realise this was a shared cultural touch point.
It's not.
It's not one for me.
I've never had that.
If you know, it's it has happened.
I've never I've never had an incident where I remember a dog running through the playground.
No, yeah.
But I believe that people do. But I've worked in a lot of places, and I don't remember us ever discussing a time when somebody has done a shite on. What did you mean, like on or
on
around?
Permutations seem to be either on the toilet seat or in the sink adjacent.
At work.
Yeah.
When my dad worked at Scottish Gas back in the 19... Well, he worked eventually in the sort of grid control area of it. But originally he was the janitor down there in Edinburgh, the big headquarters it had. And there was, I remember when I was a kid, the hearing tale of the legendary Phantom Shiter of Scottish Gas. They used to go in and like fucking spray paint one of the cubicles, or just leave shite round the taps and things, and you'd never find out who it was.
Well, like roughcast it.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
Ash,
though,
yeah.
That it's,
we should maybe look at the film here, because quite frankly, you're making me a bit sick. The fog's coming up towards the church now.
Yeah,
which
they're all sort of
hiding in.
They're all precinct 13.
Absolutely, and Prince of Darkness. And the thing. There is actually a classic.
And Halloween. And Halloween.
Even Starman to an extent.
Christine.
So they're hiding here. There is also. Has it been revealed yet that there's a pattern to the deaths?
But is I don't know. I was trying to work out why Leo Sayer would be in New York.
Why wouldn't he be in New York?
Because
he was busy in Pontins.
The 70s, he was he's in his pomp.
Not in New York.
Strong
in
New York. Listen, mate. In 1977, if Leo Sayer had to get to New York, he'd be right beside David Frost in the Concord.
He'd be right there.
Right across. Okay, set yourself down, Leon.
who's that?
David Frost.
Hello, good evening, and welcome.
Good evening, and welcome. Sit yourself down, Leon.
We've got...
Oh, my wife's going to kill me.
We've got what we always wanted. Listen.
Here we are. About to have some champagne. Stop it. This is the best ever impression.
It's great.
Just across the aisle.
It's just as well. It's just as well my yard is retired.
Leon. Just across the aisle. It's my very good friend, Mr. Michael Kahn.
Hello, Leo. Sit yourself down, mate, because that hair of yours could cause some drag and friction on this plane.
Michael Biffin would be captured by Sunday, who pretended to be David Frost.
Oh, fuck, man. And Leo would go, hey, I've been looking forward to getting across the New York. Who's that vicar sitting next to you, Michael?
Oh, hello. Father Lionel Fanthorpe. I'm on my way to Studio 54.
And who are they over in the corner?
Oh, God, let's do this. Let's go to a bottle factory or Studio 54.
Happy Halloween. I had one more thing to tell you about the shit story, though.
Go on, Philip.
So, it's last thing we move on.
Finding out that the six people who have to die.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Because they're the ones that stole the gold and set up the town. Yeah,
so the person who disclosed to me the fact of the story where he was, he had a particular role to play in this because he was the prime suspect.
Who?
This person who was telling me about...
What's his name?
I'm not going to tell you what his name is. But, no. I don't know what you said there, but it wasn't that. No. I don't know what that is. What's that? What? No. But because he used to... The person who did this did it on the second floor toilet and worked in early morning. And he fulfilled both categories. Right. Now, he always denies this, but he has said it's affected him because now he's very aware of the toiletry habits of his colleagues.
I think you should shut up about this now.
And he's noticed that quite a lot of his colleagues...
I mean, I don't even know what Studio 54, but at least I learned something about it. This is just about...
Now, this is interesting.
This is a conversation about...
It's just about somebody's paranoia on the toilet.
Quite a lot of his colleagues, if they're going away to do a number two, won't go to the nearest toilet. They'll go up or down the floor.
Why would I know that one of my colleagues is going for a shite?
Yeah.
And saying the volatile point where they're the discussing
takes,
with them.
The time it takes.
I don't pay attention to if people work on the
If you'd been
going.
Falsely accused, this is the whole point, then you would.
Then you have no work to do.
Suddenly everyone's a suspect.
No. Jesus Christ.
Developing services for the hospital in the future.
Suddenly everyone's suspect.
Right, shut up.
Digital bandages.
So it's
a paradigm shift.
Sexy young lady from Woody Allen's childhood is being attacked.
Well,
look at that cross, though. See, that's made of the gold.
Ah, you know what's quite good about that as well? There are very, very few films that adequately communicate how heavy gold is.
Ah, yeah, it's good.
They often... You know what's really bad for that, actually? It's Godfather Part 2. See, when they're passing around the solid gold telephone, some of them go, oh, look at the weight of that. And then they pass it to Lee Strasberg, who's like a fucking...
Frail wheel.
Yeah, he's like a Jack Russell with a suit on. And he just takes it and goes, oh, there you go. That's lovely.
However,
it's your fucking method.
The
right
obverse of that in The Godfather 2 is that his birthday cake looks brilliant.
Yeah, it's a nice cake.
It cuts up for everyone. Yeah. It's really,
you know, it doesn't look like it's royal icing or anything.
No, it's nice.
Looks nice.
Yeah,
I'd be saying another piece.
I like how he says, "Show it to everybody first. They all have to have a look at it." And also, it's very cleanly cut as well. It's a good knife.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it comes away on the knife too much. Yeah. Like, if you got the third slice, it'd be all smeared up the side.
Yeah. So here, he's taking it back to them now.
Okay.
We're near the end now.
Really?
No way.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, this clip's long, isn't it?
Yeah, it does.
There's a suggestion, Deborah Hill said in one of the interviews, that Hal Holbrook is kind of meant to deliberately look like Mark Twain.
All right.
Because he's telling the tale and...
That's quite interesting.
Yeah.
She also said
that
in one
of his famous stage parts.
But, he also did
Lincoln as well. You know, it was one of his stage plays that he would do.
Maybe that's just the way he was at the time.
But I thought the conceit of him telling the story was a pickup, no?
No,
never
said
that. The pickups. Otherwise, you would literally not know anything that had happened.
Here's the
baddies.
Okay. The conceit of this the pickup was right at the very beginning,
right?
Where they just had the little ghost story.
I see.
So you know who John Houseman was, don't you, Jack?
Who was he?
That was at the beginning, Mr. Mackin.
Uh-huh.
He was a famous producer. He was Orson Welles' producer of the Mercury Theatre and all that back in the 30s and 40s. And he became famous as an actor. He had been an actor as well, but then he sort of had a late career as an actor because he was in The Paper Chase.
He won an Oscar for The Paper Chase.
He did, yeah.
But he him and Orson Welles are some spectacular falling
That's
out.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Isn't he played by Eddie Marzan in that film about Orson Welles?
What is it?
It's a really good film with Zac Efron and Christian, what's his name, it looks like? The Pete Warrior is in it.
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. They're coming for her right at the top. So you said this is a pickup then?
Yeah. This was all added on later, which is why there's no set beyond
Surround
the top
it,
of it.
Yeah, you're just seeing a very tight, tightly shot.
Yeah.
Shitely tall.
Shitely tall.
So this is all done in studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
okay.
No, they went on top of the lighthouse. There, there you go. Maggoty face.
Maggoty face.
Yeah, maggot. Maggot, he'd take that, you cunt.
So this also is it's worth mentioning. The made by Avco Embassy was Joseph E. Levine.
Yes, yeah.
Who made the producers and...
And Sleuth, I think.
Yeah, it was a big, basically independent producer.
Yeah. See, that's the beauty of film then, was that the carpenter could go to him and say, I can make it for $3 million. He'd say, do it for $2.5 million.
Well, it was after Halloween. Avco Embassy came to him and offered him a two-film deal.
Nice one.
They made this.
And Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. Yeah. And then Universal had him make The Thing.
Yeah.
But they gave him a two-picture deal, which they dropped after the first one.
Fuck.
After The Thing. Which was...
There you go. That makes him go now.
So I'll... Or does it?
Or does it?
Because it's April the 21st of August.
Oh.
Or does it? The 31st of Christmas.
I love April the 21st of August. One of my favourite jokes in all of Fry and Laurie.
But the...
The red hat of Pat Ferrick.
The hat.
It's the hat man, just say so.
It's worth watching all these little YouTubes. I actually found a YouTube channel that's just making of documentaries. Just sit and watch loads.
I can lose days to this.
What I did as well? I forgot about this. I was in London, the benighted hell mouth that is London.
There you go, that's the more right now.
And I was sort of sifting through these. And there's a little half-hour documentary on the chat on this particular channel about Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah,
it was really good. Really enjoyed it.
How much did we get wrong in that one?
And then I so this is a bit meta, actually, telling this.
Of course.
This is like Spike Jones made this.
Right.
I found Ralph Bakshi has a website, or there's a ralphbakshi.com, because he does art now, and you can buy it through this website. So I emailed them the link to a Lord of the Rings commentary.
Oh, really? Did you?
So we'll see if Ralph gets back.
Yeah, that'd be nice,
I think we're quite complimentary about it, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Well, we're very complimentary with Stephen Falk, but he never listened to it.
No, that's true.
About Ghostwatch. So, that's it all over with. Everything's fine.
Yeah, wives.
Or is it?
Or is it? Or is it?
Or is it?
Or is it?
Or is it?
Or is it? So we drop a fog.
Fog's going away. Oh, it's ever cold.
So what was Jamie Lee Curtis's next big film after this then?
Halloween 2. And then Trading Places.
Oh, okay.
Which was definitely
her
big film.
Is that 83? Oh, right, okay.
And then Perfect. Which is basically an entire film based around her boobs.
Yeah. And John Travolta's pack.
Yeah, his
alarming package.
Only trumped by Tom Cruise's terrifying package in Magnolia when he gets down to his pants and bobs up and down. Crikey, alright.
I think that's more to do with, like, force perspective.
Oh, no. He's
only 3 feet tall.
Looks like he's blessed down there. Speed of which, Chris Pine in The Outlaw King, I believe.
That's on his
I'm
way.
Told, even though he gets some cold water. Nothing to be ashamed of. That's what I've heard.
He wouldn't be slogging in the showers after pee.
This is very much like the end of The Thing.
Yeah.
Look into the water, into the darkness.
So,
here we go. Here's the final scene. All fine. The priest's going back to his bottle.
Oh, and the other thing about Tommy Atkins, that's right, I wanted to drop in. is that John Carpenter has said that originally Tom Atkins was meant to be the star of Escape from New York.
Was he?
Oh, but the studio wouldn't have it.
No, that's bugging.
So
that was very wise.
Yeah. But then they sort of they developed that relationship, him and Carpenter, and
he said, "Why not six? Why didn't you take six? Why didn't you not take me?
Why not?
I don't understand it." Yeah.
You were really wanting to keep your mouth shut, huh?
An ending that I think influenced the end of Candyman.
Helen,
here we go.
Candyman. Yeah. Have you watched Candyman recently? I enjoyed it a lot better than I did the first episode.
Oh, I love Candyman. It's a much, underrated film.
When I saw it in the pictures, I thought it was a bit silly, but rewatching it.
Fuck yeah!
Rewatching it. I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah, it's great. The Fog. What a great movie.
Yeah,
that's
a
film.
Stevie Wayne.
That's quick old film, isn't it?
Don't fuck about old Carpenter at his best.
I was going to say about Carpenter having his name over the titles.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Right, so that comes from...
character called Dan O'Bannon.
When... Nancy Loomis, I've never noticed that before.
Yeah.
When... they went to make Halloween. He was approached to make Halloween because
Tommy Wallace, one of the ghosts.
Yeah, so
Rob Bottini's Blake.
I can't remember who it was, but somebody had found this investor. It's basically a Middle Eastern guy anyway, and he had a shitload of money and he wanted to put it in the films. So they came to him to make Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not about Halloween, but a film. And he said, "Well, I'll do it, but I want Final Cut. I want to write it. I want Final Cut. And I want my name over the title." And they went, "Oh, yeah, okay." And he just retained that as he went on.
For him. Yeah. I love when it comes up as The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. Brilliant.
Yeah, what other directors really have their name over the title? Not since Cecil B. DeMille, probably.
Absolutely, no.
Spielberg doesn't even have his name over titles. I mean, it kind of makes you a genre director. But that's only a problem for people who think genre direction is a problem.
Exactly, who are basically cunts.
Yeah.
Robert Team was literally, would have been about 20 there when he made this.
Wow.
He's retired now and he's still only about his mid-50s.
Do you know what? He's gone and he's had a good time and he's like, that's it.
He said he wasn't prepared to sort of try fighting against CGI. Yeah, CGI. So he made the money.
Quite right.
He was one of two or three, I suppose. Stan Winston was great as well, and whoever the
Carlo Rambaldi, I suppose, to a point. Although he's more like a crap keeper, isn't he?
But certainly doing this stuff, it was like Rob Bottin and who's the other one at the time?
Did Rob Bottin
The Thing?
That's right. Yeah, he was really young.
Big
hairy
guy.
Yeah.
Big lots of hair. Big
really
teeth.
Sort of mad.
Quite handsome. Yeah, quite handsome guy.
But
he's very young. He was only about 23 when he made The Thing.
Yeah, there was a really good thing I saw with him where he was like, he couldn't quite believe what he was getting away with.
Yeah, and that's the making of The Thing documentary. Yeah. I've seen that,
and
that's the one.
That's the one where, and I watched a couple of other ones about The Thing where I knew The Thing wasn't a success, but nobody credited at the time how hated it was.
It was really despised for its effects, it was horrible, nasty,
entrails and stuff, isn't it?
And also just the sort of sheer kind of nihilism,
and it was meant to be, you know, they said it was sort of bad ill will spirited, it was disgusting. But then America was in that
It's Morning in America
really fucking horrible Morning in America thing, where it's terrible to have some creature effects in a film. It's all right to sack all the air traffic controllers and the teachers. Fucking cunts.
And on that bombshell.
Well then, bombshell.
So that was
Halloween special.
Or was it?
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 Or was it?